This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What's up, WOMED fam? It's your host, Dee.
And Jackie here, and we are so excited to bring you this episode with a good friend of mine, Dr. Jessica, or Jess Dudley. Jess and I went to nursing school years ago, and we have remained great friends, and it has been incredible to see her move throughout her career, being a true trailblazer in her field, and so excited to bring this conversation to the WOMED fam.
All right, Jackie, it's time for my favorite segment, Nursty Energy. I'm so excited to bring this one back. I think it's really important. We're going to extend it a bit to kind of like we've talked about. We want to be able to send out love to anyone that is kind of struggling with their career right now, or they just need to know someone else is thinking about them. But this week, you had something that you wanted to share.
I did. I'm so excited to share my first NDE. As you know, I've been a listener of the podcast for a long time, listened to a lot of your NDEs, listeners' NDEs submit theirs. And, you know, I think it's time that I'm excited to share my own.
You finally get to share one.
You guys, I'm blushing already just even thinking about sharing this. So, you know, as we all have kind of been through the last two years, of this pandemic, like many of you, I have just been struggling with a lot of different, you know, mental health things, some anxiety, depression, stress, you know, you name it. We've kind of all been through the ringer the past 2 years. And I will never forget the moment of just opening up my phone and seeing Danielle's message to me asking, you know, Jackie, I know this may seem out of the blue, but how do you feel about being co-host of the WOMED? So my NDE this week, this month, this freaking year, because this is like, this is a game changer. Being asked to become the co-host of such an established, beautiful podcast with a family, a community, you have created such a strong group of healthcare workers. You have inspired so many, and to be asked to go on this with you is just humbling, doesn't even start to cover it. So I'm so excited to be part of this family and to do this with you, Dee.
And I am trying not to cry and get emotional. Wow.
We've been a little emotional the past few days.
Yeah. I mean, podcasts are a lot of work. It's stressful. We're both on our periods.
Yes.
Synced up.
Yes. Danielle and I are already synced up. So I think that goes to show you that maybe this was truly meant to be. but yeah, I really am just overwhelmed with emotions with starting this podcast with you. And starting, I mean, of course, again, you have created such a incredible platform and you have given me such an open welcome to take the WOMED in the direction that we see it going in this upcoming year. You've given me some creative freedom. You've given me a voice. You've given me so many incredible opportunities that thinking about the struggles of the past 2 years and having this opportunity, and opportunity sounds like such like a resume weird word to use, but we're going with
it. I'm interviewing you right now.
I know. But it really is. It's an opportunity and one that I never, never would have dreamed of. I never could have imagined that we would just be sitting here, hanging out, doing this damn thing together. So
I didn't dream it either.
So Dee, thank you for having me, WOMED family. Thank you for welcoming me with open arms. And I am so excited to see where we take this podcast this year.
Big things, Jackie.
Let's fucking go.
Jess, thank you so much for joining us on the WOMED today. Jackie has told me so much about you. She loves you. She speaks so highly of you. And I'm like, I need to mate this incredible human.
Oh my God. No, thank you. This is such an incredible honor. I appreciate it. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So I have known Jess since nursing school, since years ago. We Holy met cow. In nursing school. Yeah. Little so babies. We have kind of woven in and out of each other's lives for, I mean, when did we graduate? I'm trying to think. I think that was 2016. So I'm not doing the math. Danielle knows I can't do math in my head. But in 2016, we graduated from nursing school. And yes, Jess and I were...
I'm so old.
You are not that old. We're all in our 30s here.
I graduated nursing school in 2007.
Okay. You also have been a nurse for a very long time.
Now I hit my elbow.
Another elbow bump.
It's fine. It's fine.
My office has a lot of dangerous corners. Thanks for bearing with us through our injuries. So yes, Jess and I went to nursing school. We went to the University of Illinois at Chicago, which was a master's program for nursing. It was a 2.5-year-long program for people that already had bachelor's degrees in something else. Mine was in a science-related background, anatomy and physiology, but Jess, I actually don't even know, what was your bachelor's degree in?
Neuroscience and philosophy.
Whoa. You just keep getting cooler.
What? Neuroscience and philosophy.
Yeah.
I was never hip enough to like understand philosophy totally, or maybe I just didn't know that I was having conversations around centered in philosophy. Is that philosophy? I don't
know. That's philosophy.
So, Jess, okay. Did you know when you were majoring in those things that you wanted to go into healthcare, that you wanted to go into nursing?
I did. Well, not nursing. So I was originally pre-med. And then philosophy actually turned me into nursing.
Ooh.
We studied a lot about like the human brain and the soul and how do you get in tune with yourself. And it just pushed me more into nursing, the more holistic side of healthcare, bringing together the whole instead of the sum of the pieces. Philosophy Ooh. Quote.
All right, we have our show intro.
Yes.
That was just beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful. Can you say that again? And I'm going to write that down and put it on my office wall where I do my work every day.
She's going to paint it.
Do you have a moment specifically when you knew that you wanted to switch your track from pre-med to nursing?
I actually was in the college clinic. And I was seeing a nurse practitioner and she didn't have a white coat on. And I remember in one of my philosophy classes, I was reading about the white coat phenomenon, folks with white coats intimidate. And I hadn't noticed that I felt way more comfortable with her, and nothing against white coats, but she was just also very much more, I don't know. She was just talking to me. We were having a conversation and that's when I started asking her about her route. Cause I hadn't at that point, didn't even realize that she was a nurse practitioner. I thought she was a physician. And that's when, you know, we just stayed in touch. And I started researching post-BSN or BA nursing programs, post-BA programs.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, when did the doctorate come into play? Because it's in population health, right?
So I'm all over the place. So
I just want to hear your whole, like, this is such a beautiful, like, spiderweb pathway.
Yeah.
So
yeah, from the beginning. Yeah. Start from the beginning. Let's hear your story real quick. I would love to even like go back even a little bit further.
Absolutely. Like high school? Like JK. No. So I went to Lake Forest College, got my Bachelor of Arts in neuroscience and philosophy. During that time I met a nurse practitioner who made me realize that I did want to go into nursing. But I didn't necessarily want a second bachelor's degree. So I found UIAC, University of Illinois at Chicago, got my master's there in nursing. While there, I'm working with one of our lovely professors there in community. And this was at the point where I was deciding whether I wanted to be a nurse practitioner or a population-focused practitioner. So she pushed me into really deciding whether I wanted to be a direct care practitioner or whether I wanted to do systems-focused. And at that point, I didn't feel confident as a nurse, but I did realize I felt more attached to just populations and changing systems to affect change in a certain population. So that's where the DNP and advanced population health came from. So I graduated with that. And after, you know, looking into what I was going to do next with my life, I decided that I could still wanted to give direct care, but also be involved in policies and health system changes. So now I'm back in school for a post-DNP certificate in midwifery so that I can change mortality rates.
So this will be grade 25 for you.
Yes, grade 25.
So you're working currently as an L&D nurse and going to school. I know you're really passionate about talking about Black mortality rates in birthing populations. And I feel like that's just, not that it's like just more recently come to light, but I feel like with the Black Lives Matter movements and everything, you know, every discrepancy and disparity and stuff, especially in healthcare too, with COVID following closely behind it, the light's on everything right now, finally, like, well, way long overdue. But this is a problem that's been, it's like centuries long problem, basically.
For sure. Sorry, and I might get a little bit emotional, but my passion for Black motherhood, Black birthing populations, Black women, Black folks, it's been forever. I just see the struggles, and I also know the struggles. And when I learn the numbers, because at some point, you know, I see these things and I hear these things and I know they're happening. But when you quantify it, that's when it's like, wow, what the heck? There was one point in nursing school where the advisor just said to me, you know, you really like Black people. Do you know that Black women are dying? And, you know, I was still a little bit ignorant at that point. And I said, well, you know, we need to do more education in health. We need to do more upstream counseling. We need to, you know, make access to grocery stores. And then she said to me, no, you have a master's degree. You're three times more likely to die after giving birth. So I'm like, at first, I'm like, what is she saying to me? Like,
that's shocking.
So controlling for everything, Black women, Black birthing populations, Black parents are more likely to die or get really sick in their birth period and postpartum. So I am on a very slow unwinding path to try and change that, whether it's very slow changes or massive changes or fast changes. I'm trying to do it somehow.
I remember in nursing school, you know, back in 2006 when I was doing my L&D rotations too, I think that's when it was first said to me that some people don't think Black people experience pain the same way. And I was like, how? Like, how is that even like a thing? You're human, you experience pain. Who justifies that, that like someone might not have the same pain experience as you do? And like, it's taught in med schools and stuff too. Like, there are still people, I mean, like, it's starting to change finally. I say that as, you know, a white woman, and other doctors that I've talked to, they're like, no, I remember that being taught in schools too, like before they graduated, that like, it was a common thought that Black people just don't experience pain the same way, or that they like over-exaggerate it. And that makes like, it makes us like vomit rise up in the back of my throat. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Right. And these things that we're talking about are so deeply rooted in racism and our systemic systems that perpetuate racism. And it is extremely prevalent and thriving in the medical community, in the systems of which we practice medicine. And, you know, Jess, you obviously, like, you have a doctorate in population health. You are considered an expert on this topic. You know, for the listener out there who maybe is hearing this for the first time and is hearing that Black women, regardless of education status, regardless of, you know, poverty level, homeless status, whatnot, not that it would ever even be okay. But even when we're controlling for these variables that so many people will try to use as a scapegoat or as an outlet to say, oh, but X, Y, Z, even when we control for these variables, Black women are three times more likely to die in the birth process. So for maybe the listener that is hearing this for the first time, can you shed some light into what does this mean to you, both as a Black woman and as a practitioner?
So I'm trying very hard as I go on this path to try to separate the things, but I'm learning that they're not separable. So I am going to answer it together. as a Black woman, I don't even know what it means. It's just, it's scary. And, you know, this is a Black woman who's speaking from a level of privilege that other Black women, Black people, Black folks don't have. So if it's scary for me, I can't imagine how my sister or how my neighbor or how my grandma or, you know, other folks before me might have felt, whether they're in the same position or not as me. So as a provider, healthcare professional, and someone who aims to be an expert in population health, what it means is that I try my best to be very conscious about the care that I'm delivering, how I'm speaking to folks, and how I'm going to help them along the journey. And again, that's hard too, because implicit Black bias plays a role in my perception. You know, everyone has implicit biases. Black people, white people, Asian people, every person has implicit biases. So, I mean, for a tiny example, I'm a labor and delivery nurse. We have this thing, birthing populations come in and they're, I want to go natural. I want to deliver naturally. So no medications, no westernized interventions, basically. And that's great. I encourage it. But what I try not to encourage is the word natural, to separate a woman getting an epidural versus a woman not getting an epidural, especially because Black people are already looked at as having a higher level of pain tolerance. And I feel that has also been internalized with Black folks. So I just try to, you know, help folks understand that you are still strong, even if you do get an epidural, and you don't have to bear the weight of you thinking that you're strong, not like strong to the point where you have to bear pain, or, you know, if that makes sense.
It really does. And I treat a lot of Black women and stuff in the aesthetic clinic that I work in too. And every one of them is like, no, it's okay. Like, I've got a high pain tolerance. And I'm like, but you shouldn't have to, right? I'm like, no, like, I still, like, I don't want to be like inflicting any more pain than possible on you. So please do let me know if this hurts more at like a certain point. We'll stop. We'll put on whatever music helps make you calm. I got some stress balls. I got some crystals. I'll do this, you know. Or if they're coming out of surgery and they're like, it's okay, I have a high pain tolerance. I feel like that's, like you're saying, it's almost internalized to where Black folks believe that too. And there might be something with, like, you know, mind over matter too, but you shouldn't have to bear that. Like, if you feel pain, like, let your providers know. And your provider also shouldn't be looking at you and being like, they're just being dramatic, right? Or is it really that bad? You know, it's, pain is subjective too. Like, there could be a lot of underlying trauma aligned with that pain too. You know,
you brought up a really good point too, Jess, about the internal biases, that implicit bias is the, you know, definition that we see in the healthcare community now kind of being shed more light. And, you know, I think you made a great point that we all have implicit biases regardless of the race that we have. And I am hopeful that the medical community, that the medical education system, both in for physicians, for nurses, for everyone, we're starting to normalize these terms and normalize the training. And if I remember, this is what your doctoral project was on.
It was.
So tell us a little bit more about your DNP project and how this fits into your story.
Absolutely. So my DNP project was implicit bias, and it originated from the idea of seeing if implicit bias training would help with the care being provided to Black populations. My DNP project was implemented during COVID. That was not where it went. However, the moral and the purpose of it still stands. I implemented my DNP project in a homeless shelter on the south side of Chicago, and it was purposed into trying to reduce care avoidance in the residents. So care avoidance is basically folks not getting care or seeking care, whether they have access or not, simply because of trauma or judgment or some outside source that is influencing them or scaring them to not get the care. So the implicit bias training was done with the staff in the shelter to see if, you know, we could change the way they thought about the residents in their upbringing to possibly be more inviting for folks to receive care. When I did a assessment of the staff, a lot of them had ideas that, well, I was homeless once. These folks need to just, you know, pull themselves up by the bootstraps and they'll be cool, with no, like, you know, inclination of how, like, mental health plays a role, how, you know, some folks just can't do what you do, and they still need care too. So that's where that was. And the results weren't really done. We didn't get any, really. But we are still carrying that out, hoping that we can still pilot that in different areas.
Such an incredible idea to bring this to light with bringing your DMP project and addressing implicit bias, because it makes me wonder, you know, if nurses are interested in going back to, in getting their DNP, part of that DNP process is writing your proposal, which has to take a excruciatingly long look at the literature. And I'm curious, you know, in your process of having to write your proposal, what is out there on implicit bias? I would imagine it's probably nowhere near what it should be.
You'd be surprised. My project was, when did I do the lit review? 2019. So in the last couple of years, there's more evidence, or not evidence, more literature on implicit bias now. Like you said, Danielle, more folks are being aware of implicit bias and, you know, looking into how the way we think about things affect care. But then there was, you know, here and there, small things about implicit bias, but there was not much. There was one main classic study that showed the effects of implicit bias on Black people in general. But so that's kind of just where I pulled my ideas from, that training, because that's actually the only validated training out there right now. So there's not much. There's still more to come.
There's so much more to come. And that's really, I hate to say, like, shocking. There just needs to be another word. I'm just intrigued by the fact that there weren't more studies up until that point, because I feel like, you know, even like the word, you know, implicit bias and internalized bias, and those are terms that, you know, some people are like triggered by now too, that they're like, what are you talking about? Like, you're trying to make me racist and stuff like that. And they're very hot words and stuff, you know, since within like the last like 2-3 years, and, you know, things like that are they're topics that are trending more on social media, you know. But like, I'm hopeful now that like more people are like waking up to that. I'm really glad that we can have conversations around that now, and that more people are becoming aware of their own like internalized biases and starting to sit with that, and like what makes them uncomfortable about that, and how we can make, especially in medicine, just provide better care, better empathy, like a safer healing environment.
It makes me wonder too, if you have had thoughts about whether or not implicit bias training should be mandatory in medical school, mandatory in nursing school, mandatory, you know, we have to do CEs every year as a nurse. Every year that you have some sort of healthcare license, you are mandated to do continuing education hours. Are these things that we should be, you know, forced to do? They should be in medical and nursing and X, Y, and Z professional educations.
Absolutely. The same way we do the sexual assault and sexual harassment trainings, we should be doing implicit bias. The unfortunate thing is that right now, since there is so little research on it, not many folks are wanting to, I guess, bring it on board it without
the data.
However, I think it needs to be started, whether it's unit-based, whether it's hospital-based, whether it's city-based. I know there are a couple of City of Chicago organizations that are pulling into implicit bias training. Should definitely be in a lot of medical training, for sure.
I'll say that, especially in the South.
Yes, Danielle is from Nashville, for all of those. Jess and I are both from Chicago, like, originally. Nah, that is where we are right now. Because, you know, now I'm wondering too, you know, we, Jess, with your doctorate in population health and your understanding of these systems and your aspirations to seek true change in the healthcare system, you pivoted. You did decide to kind of go back, take a clinical role as a certified nurse midwife. You are already starting this process. So I would love to know the thought process of, you know, you already have your doctorate, which is basically the highest degree you can get as a nurse. What was that thought process for you deciding that, you know what, I need to be a midwife. I need to be right there, hands-on delivering babies.
Absolutely. The thought about that. So population health is this, I'm going to use your term, spider web of things, right? Feelings, healthcare issues, policies, guidelines. It's a web of things. You know, when I first started my doctorate program in population health, I wanted to affect change. So I wanted to be at the round table making policies that are going to affect care, trickle down effects, right? Policies that are going to affect hospitals to change the way they care for providers. But then, you know, in my research, I started seeing Black people make up less than 6% of primary care providers and midwives specifically. And I can't imagine that that percentage is any different for physicians. And there's also research that shows Black people get better care when they get care from someone that looks like them. And this shouldn't be, I know sometimes that makes, you know, that make people uncomfortable when I say that, and it shouldn't. You know, that's a very human thing. That's a sociological thing.
It's a trust issue though, too.
So that was my thought process. If there are no Black people in midwifery, or a very limited amount of Black people in midwifery, Black people need Black midwives. I shall probably be a midwife. I was going to be a WHNP anyways, but we need more Black folks helping folks labor. We need to see more Black people. We need more diversification of the education system and folks in faculty positions, and just need more diversification. That was my thought process.
And you are doing it firsthand.
Oh, I'm trying. It's very scary, but...
I think one of my favorite things about you, Jess, and as you said, we've been friends for a long time. I always hype this girl up because you absolutely deserve it. But one of my absolute favorite things about you is that you are always dreaming big. You are always shooting high. And so you are already at this incredible amount of success in your career. You have a doctorate. You are about to become a nurse midwife. You've worked as an L&D nurse. Where do you see your career going?
Like, that's a great question, because I'm just sitting here. I'm like, I'm in awe. I'm like, I want to talk to you after this about, like, you've got me like fired up about wanting to go back to school. And like, I'm really curious about this population health, like, sort of like policy change. I've always been very interested in that. And like, even more so now, like, I want to go to Washington. I want to make some changes happen. But yeah, what are your dreams?
Mm-hmm. What are my dreams? That is a very hard question. Eventually, this is going to sound a little off, but it's not. At the very end of my career stage, I'm going to kind of go backwards. I want to open a med spa, and it's not the med spa that we see often, where, you know, what are the yoni steams?
You mean we're not going to like steam our vaginas?
Yeah, no.
With like potpourri and tea bags?
I don't even know what this is.
Yeah, yoni is another name for your vagina.
You all continue.
And Gwyneth Paltrow started it. I'm like, I don't want to burn that. The steam gets hot.
Right. So no, not that type of med spa. But I have a desire to open up, and I'm calling it a med spa, but a clinic for minorities to seek care, whether it's STI testing, whether it's family planning, whether it's, hey, my skin... is this? What type of sunscreen should I use? I don't know. That's my end goal. A very population focused and like cultural competent med spa, soul spa, wellness spa where folks can get, you know, comprehensive healthcare, but also, you know, fuel their soul. Leading up to that, that's my end passion. Leading up to that, I do hope to somehow, some way, whether it's virtually or actually stomping on the steps of Washington, demanding some type of change in the way things are done. And this is not, it should not be state to state. That drives me up the wall. There should be a standardized level of care for every birthing person, every Black person, every person. There should be a standardized way to care. And if that means going to Lori Lightfoot and, hey girl, what's up? Having a little conversation.
Lori is the mayor of Chicago for those who don't, maybe like, do not Lori. Know.
Yeah. So that's it. I don't know to answer truthfully, but it's a bunch of all of those little things and figuring out as I go. What do I want to do? I know I want to do this, but how am I going to do it? So that's, yeah.
We know you're going to change the world. We're just excited to sit back, watch you, and also lift you up and see you do it. Now, you also have started your own business on the side. Somehow, in all of these things.
Why do nurses just take on everything?
Because
do everything. We're like constantly trying to prove ourselves or something.
And you found your creative outlet. So I want to hear a little bit more about that. The soul experiment.
Yeah. So the soul experiment is my baby. And it's taken off a little slower than I expected. But that's a part of being an experiment of the soul. I'm leaning into what my body and what my life is asking of me. So the soul experiment started with all of these thoughts that I've been having about social justice and how my thoughts don't align with some of my family members. That's where all birth. So who am I? If I come from you and we think different, why am I different? And what does that mean for me and you? And so the Soul Experiment is a blog/custom pin site, eventually podcast, where we are having conversations, basically. It's literally just meant to bring up hard conversations that folks don't want to have, and we do it in the most respectful manner, and we listen to each other. The motto is learning, glowing, and growing together. And that's literally what I want to do. I want to learn about thoughts. I want to learn what you think, I want you to learn what I think. I want to come together and glow and grow. And even if we don't agree, we can't not agree on racism. If we don't agree, baby girl, keep it moving. But on other things, if we can't agree on certain things, how can we, you know, still coexist? So that's the soul experiment. It's a lifestyle blog on just us being who we are in this world. And I know that sounds very squishy, but we all live together. We coexist. If we were to get down to just the basics, like we are all humans with two legs or no legs, or we're humans on this earth together.
We're all souls existing.
Period. And we're experiments. We don't know
anything. I love that we are experiments. There's that philosophy major coming in.
Period.
That's awesome. That's incredible. I love this idea that you have for this med spa. Jackie had mentioned earlier that you were wanting to create like a birthing center too. Is that like included with the med spa or?
So that's another one of my huge dreams eventually, is to be a part of the, I guess, establishing a birthing center, a Black birthing center. One of the folks that I really, really look up to, she is currently in the process of putting together a birthing center on the South Side, Carrie Stewart, and she is the owner of Melanated Midwives. I hope she don't mind me calling her out. Girl, I love you. She's amazing. She created Melanated Midwives. They provide scholarships and all of these opportunities for BIPOC folks to enter into midwifery. Hello, diversification of the workforce. Mm-hmm. She is also a driver in creating a birthing center on the South Side of Chicago for Black folks. One of our hospitals over on the South Side
I think closed. If not already, like it's closing. If not,
Mercy, are you talking about?
Yes.
It was, I do believe that they were going to close. I think someone may have bought them out last minute, but from what I know, they were closing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she came trailblazing through, like, we need this for our folks because there is so limited access on the south side. So to be a part of something like that with her or without, you know, that's one of my dreams. How can we be trailblazers? How can we do this?
Yes. Oh my, that would be so cool. I love the melanated midwives. That sounds like another person we need to have on the podcast too. Because that'd be awesome.
We will definitely link Melanated Midwives in the show notes because they really are an incredible organization that Jess has shown me. And I've been watching their work over the last few years, and they have been able to put a few Black people through midwifery education. And it's an incredible organization that is just doing just groundbreaking work, truly.
100%.
I want to circle back to some of that too, though. But like young girls and stuff growing up, when they're thinking about who, like what they want to be when they grow up too, need to see people that look like them as well. So we really need to be encouraging and lifting up more melanated voices in healthcare and like showing that like and diversifying that more so that the next population of people going into medicine, like it starts to create a bigger wave of change so that you have more providers that look like you. You have more safety when like you go and you find a provider, like you feel like they're going to listen to you. They're going to hear you. They can relate to you. That's what the WOMED is, man. I want everyone to see some version of themselves when they come to this podcast, when they sit down and they want to listen to an episode or they're curious about what field they want to get into. I want everyone to see themselves in something so that they know it's achievable, right? They already saw someone do it. They know it's achievable. Not everybody is a super, you know, trailblazer, can be the first one to do something. Like, I mean, I'm a baby. Like, I get scared. I don't like to be, I would not consider myself a leader or a trailblazer by any means.
I would beg to disagree, but
okay. Well, you're very kind, but it's just so important. That's like the basis of the WOMED. And there's so many things that weave into that too. Like you were saying with the med spa and having, you know, the aesthetic world is kind of fucked up. I mean, the idealized standards of beauty are all white faces. But then we add in things that are more characteristic of, you know, of Black bodies. You know, we add in like, you know, thicker lips. We add in like, or like more defined like cheekbones from like, it's just this huge like cultural mixing. But then like white people are taking it on as like their own. Like we just
it's almost like aesthetically appropriating.
Yeah.
If that's a term that we can coin. I don't know if anyone's heard of that. I've never really thought about it like that, to be quite honest. I would love to, Jess, have you heard that? Or like, what are your thoughts on that?
I have actually. I don't know. I mean, it's true, you know, and I don't want to make anyone upset, but it's just kind of like, everyone wants to look like us. What if I wants to be us? No one wants to bear what we go through. I had a friend who, Black people, we do baby hairs. Okay. So like we got edges and our edges are curly. We slick them down with edge control. I had a friend who was slicking her edges and, you know, I have no problem with that. Slick your edges, girl. But I just want you to know where you slicking your edges come from, where those bamboo earrings come from. So 100%, I 100% agree that.
But then we also don't make enough like sunblock products that are like SPF that melanated faces can wear without having a white fucking cast on their face.
Right. Yeah. I know a huge problem we've seen in the clinic as well as a good example is birth control patches. Come in one color of skin.
Oh my God.
Right. And so typically when people want to come in for birth control, if they want a patch, the idea is that you have the patch to kind of hide it from people. So people don't see it. That's the point. So if it only comes in one color, well,
what are you going to do?
Right.
So maybe we'll put that on the shelves at your new med spa.
Period.
Yes. Even like nude, when you have to wear like nude colored underwear, like they're finally, oh my God, one of the most beautiful things, I'm totally going off on a tangent here, I'm sorry, was like point shoes. They finally made fucking point shoes. They're so pretty in different tones. I mean, I love ballet, though. That's my own little tangent. There's, we're getting so off track here. From dancing to, dancing to aesthetics to midwifery.
Yes.
This is the WOMED where we have it all.
Period.
I know we kind of talked about like what your like dreams, big goals and stuff are. I guess what's coming up next for you, like in the future that like you really want to like focus on, or like what, do you have any like big projects or, you know, something you want to promote right now?
Yeah. So the Soul Experiment podcast, I launched it when I launched my blog a while back, and school and everything just, again, we're soul experiments. So I leaned into what my body needed. I just didn't have enough time in a day to do everything. So it kind of took a back shelf, but it's coming back. I don't know when yet, but very soon. So the Soul Experiment podcast, it should be available on every streaming platform. So
I love that. I love that. I love podcasting. It's so much fun. I love other women podcasting.
This all does really take a lot of effort behind the scenes, truly. So many things are happening that, you know, and it's hard. We, nurses especially, truly, we take on so many things. We just, I don't know if it's that we don't know how to say no, or we truly need that creative outlet, what the issue is, but we all have this tendency to just want to do so many different things.
I think a bit of us are like codependent fixers.
You we're said people, it, not me.
We're people-pleasing fixers. That's why we get into problematic relationships. Sorry, that's just me? Okay.
All right, I'm cutting Danielle off of the tangents today.
She's anyway, I'm really excited about your podcast.
Oh, thank you.
I'm excited to listen to it. I love the idea of that, and it's not squishy. It's not. it's something I think people really forget. They forget the humanity component. Not just of healthcare, of life in general. You know, they forget their neighbor. They forget to think outside themselves. I think we've seen that a lot with COVID. And also with COVID, Black people died at a much more alarming rate. I don't know the exact numbers, but I know that there's been more hesitancy like around the vaccine too as well with the Black population. But I mean, we honestly, like I can't blame y'all. I mean, our history is just littered with atrocities done, experiments done. So like, what do you think is like the best way to like approach people who might be vaccine hesitant or like are scared of like seeking healthcare and stuff for that?
The best way? I don't know the best way. I don't think anyone knows the best way. I don't even think folks who are hesitant know the best way they, you know, want to be approached, but just transparency, honesty, have some empathy, some sympathy for who you're talking to. Present it as a choice. And that I took a deep breath because this is one of the things I struggle with because I feel like it is so needed. I don't want to present it as a choice, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and this is me just speaking honestly. I was watching one episode, kind of small tangent, a week ago or something, where they were talking about folks being bullied into getting the vaccine. And in my head, I'm like, but are folks bullying people to get the vaccine? Like, am I giving you a wedgie to get, for you to get a vaccine? I don't know.
Are
what
we
you're
giving
talking
you swirlies in the bathroom toilets to give you vaccines?
Like what? And you know, but the best way is to present it as a choice. You know, ultimately, this is a choice, I guess. And this is how it was developed. These are the facts. And then ask the question, what makes you hesitant? What is it? You know, cause there could be a bunch of different things why folks are hesitant. We don't know, you know, so why are you hesitant? And leave it at that. If, you know, they say, well, I don't really want to talk about it, but I know I don't want it because of this.
okay, cool. Let me know when, you know, you have additional questions or how I can help with that.
I think this wraps around really beautifully to where we started the conversation, where you, you know, telling us and sharing that a huge motivation of why you want to become a midwife and impact healthcare is because you are a Black woman. And I think part of that answer is that it comes from the Black community and it comes from healthcare professionals like you talking to people that look like you and people that are trusting of you as their doctor, as their nurse practitioner, as their provider, right? We can have so many of these conversations, but at the end of it, we need more Black healthcare providers.
For sure.
Right? Leading these conversations. And it really just wraps beautifully to you.
Jess, where can people find you if they want to connect with you, keep up with you?
Keep up with me on Instagram, Jess, J-E-S-S _ because, B-E-E-C-A-U-S-E. Find cat content. You can find healthcare content. I think you can literally find everything on my Instagram and also on my blog, thesoulexperiment.blog. And then eventually my podcast, anywhere podcasts are streaming.
Amazing. Jess, thank you so much for coming on the WOMED. We're excited to keep up with your journey. And
oh, thank you.
Anytime you have anything coming up or you want to, if you're just like, fuck it, I need to get on the mic and like talk through this with Dee and Jackie, like you have a welcome space in here anytime.
Thank you so much. I definitely appreciate y'all.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming on the WOMED. I know our listeners will be so, so happy to hear this conversation and truly impacted. So thank you.
I love Jess.
How can you not?
She's phenomenal.
She is just like definition of a badass.
I can't wait to talk to her more.
I'm already thinking like we need to have her back.
For sure.
I feel like this conversation just we touched the tip of the iceberg here.
We did. So I'm excited. And, you know, Jess knows she has a open seat on here anytime she wants. But in case you missed it, you can find Jess on Instagram at Jess, that's 2 S's, 2 _ because, that's J-E-S-S _ B-E-E-C-A-U-S-E. You can also find her blog, pins, and her future podcast, The Soul Experiment, very excited for that one, at thesoulexperiment.blog.
And we hope that you guys enjoyed this conversation as much as we did. Dee and I truly are still talking about the things that we touched on with Jess. And if you loved it as much as we did, please rate, review, subscribe, all the things.
It helps so much. It's annoying, I know, but it really does help.
And submit your NDEs. We want to hear from you. We want to hear the positive things going on. We know this is a tough time right now. And so if you need a shout out, if you need some extra love, submit your NDEs, and we are so happy to share your stories, send you some uplifting words, little pep talk.
Yes. You can get the Jackie and Dee special pep talk.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right, y'all. On that note, we love you. We'll see you next week. WOMED out.